Hello, Robin. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's a joy to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to our conversation today. You have a very interesting profession. You're a soul alignment healer. You run a program called Equenergy, where you really help people find, you know, what it means to be their authentic selves and to live happy and fulfilled and empowered lives. And it's a tremendous, you know, duty that and service that you're providing to people. And I think that's great. And we're here to talk about, you know, how that process works and the kinds of people that you've helped and animals. And I'm very excited. So how about we get started with a quick question of just like, how did you get into this field? Like what drew you to become a coach in this capacity?
I think very similar to a lot of people who work in the well-being field. Quite often it's your own story. So for me, I was in a place where I was feeling very, very low, pretty miserable and thinking just life isn't going to get any better. I wanted everything out there to change. So I needed people to do things differently and I needed the system to be different. And I felt powerless to change any of that. And it just felt like banging my head against a brick wall. But you know, I asked for help from lots of different places. I went to the doctor, I went to counseling, and none of it was quite answering what I needed. It didn't feel sustainable. It didn't feel uplifting. It didn't really feel all that supportive. It was just take this pill or tell me about your childhood. But without moving forward, it just seemed to repeat the pattern. I felt that every time I talked about it, I was just back in that same energy and not shifting anything. So I am a bit of a bookworm and I went off, I did some reading and I also love learning. So I went and did a course, which is based around a book. So it worked well for me. Andrew Cohen, Evolutionary Enlightenment. And that changed my perspective on so many things. And I also read Neil Donald Walsh's trilogy, Conversations with God, and got back to all of that kind of way of looking at the world and its interconnectivity, that it's all energy, it's all vibration, that we can change our internal world and that changes everything. And realizing that it was only me who could change what was going on for me, my experience, but that making very small changes actually had huge impacts. And
right.
It was me making the changes. I got to choose how that was going to play out and I could make it fun. So it just shifted everything for me. And it's just then wanting to share that knowledge of potential and possibility with other people and maybe share a few tools that I find helpful for me and people can then adopt and adapt them as feel right to them. I don't think there's one size fits all at all in any way. So it's not that I want to share a program and you follow the program. It's more, let's go on an adventure together. Let's take a bit of a journey. Let's do some exploration. It's more about being open and curious and compassionate and forgiving ourselves and finding our own way, what works for each individual.
Mm-hmm. That's a, you know, it's a very inspiring story, I think, because I think it resonates with a lot of people who have, you know, been suffering and tried many different avenues and approaches and, you know, done whatever you could to try and feel better or get better or change life. And then, you know, you read something and something just clicks right inside and you're like, oh, this is exactly what I've been looking for or what I've needed or, you know, it just works. And so what was it about these programs or these books that you read for you that really connected and allowed you to process what you were going through or, you know, make those small changes and be able to improve your life?
I think it's kind of that thing of when the student is ready, the master will appear. And open up your whole self to seeing the potentials and the possibilities and to the resonance of that's the one that feels good to me. So it was very much just around that, around what feels right. what feels mm-hmm. good. And then I went on, I discovered Abraham Hicks, who talks all about, does it feel right? And how can you feel better? And I began, because I'm very much, or have been very much, a head person. I analyze and I think about things. I yeah. probably had quite a disconnect with my body then. I wasn't listening to my body. But when I was younger, I was very much aware of the interconnectivity of everything, of intuition and following that and listening to that. And I think that's kind of where I got a little bit sidetracked and gone off, and why things had got out of balance for me, because I wasn't doing that anymore. I'd got too into my headspace for various different reasons. But it was coming back to that. It was that sense of, like Neil Donald Walsh talks about, remembering, bringing back mm-hmm. and feeling that connection again. And when you feel, it's like another friend of mine talks about making sure that your plug is wired correctly, because we know the front bit of the plug and we stick it into the socket and hopefully all works well. But if it isn't wired correctly internally, it won't work. So I think it was just that sense of, oh, the circuit has been connected. The light comes on, like that light bulb moment. I think
yeah.
it was just finding the missing piece for me. And it won't be the same missing piece for everybody. But it's listening to the gut and listening to, or being open to finding, what is it that I'm looking for? Starting to ask for that and trusting that it will come, and that when it does come, you'll know it.
Right. And I think that's a very important point, right? Because we do live in a world that's kind of very, you know, mind heavy, so to speak. And almost all of the attention and focus of a society is developing your mental capacities and, you know, trying to problem solve everything mentally. And sometimes that works, and it works in certain cases. And it's, you know, been a tremendous evolutionary advantage for us to construct these societies that we live in. But it comes at a cost, right? Which is that disconnect from our body and our, you know, what you would call like your sort of intuition and your inner voice of knowing what's right for you, and developing that trust that you can listen to that voice or that feeling or whatever it is. And, you know, even if your logical mind might disagree with it, you know, being able to separate one from the other is an important step, right, in figuring all this out. And so how do you kind of coach people into identifying, like, what exactly is intuition versus just regular thoughts? Or, you know, how do you know what's right? Or is it that same thing, like you said, about what Abraham Hicks says about, you know, when you know, is it kind of like that?
It's kind of a mixture of a lot of things, and it's very much not that being in your headspace is wrong. It's just one option, and knowing that there are other aspects that we can draw on as well. Knowing that even in a physical sense, we have three brains. We have our head brain, our heart brain, and our gut brain. And just drawing on all of those, knowing that you have them there and you just can bring them all together, and then the you that's behind those three can look at the interplay between what's my mind telling me, what's my heart telling me, what's my gut telling me, and out of balance of all of those, what do I think is the best choice for me? And it's not even that I have to make that choice and that's it and I'm stuck with it forever, and if it's wrong, it's all going to go pear-shaped and I'm hoping that it's right. It's just I make a choice and then I move along in that choice, and then I review that choice, and I can change it if I don't like it. And we change over time anyway, so you can't expect that a choice you make today is going to be the same in 5 years, 10 years, or a lot less, actually, probably, because the world is changing so quickly these days. It might be different tomorrow.
Yeah, and being okay with that, right? Yeah. And not being too self-critical or blaming yourself for making a so-called bad choice. I mean, I tend to view things like, well, when you make a choice in general, you're making the choice that is the best at that time, right? You're never really going to choose the worst option. I mean, you might choose a more harsh or more intense option, but that's because you think it's for the good for some reason for you, right? And you might be wrong or you might be right, but that's the choice you make. And so it's hard to, you know, like accept that without being self-blaming. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, but I can no longer see you.
Yeah, the video just seems to have cut out for a sec, but as long as you can hear me, that's all good.
Very clearly.
And yet, all right, great.
It's when I'm working with somebody, I'm very much listening to what they say and how they say it and supporting them in using vocabulary and so on that's much more supportive. So not to be focusing on the do's and the don'ts and the shoulds and the ought to's and the have to's. You can even feel in your body quite often that kind of feels small. It feels like it's restrictive. So trying to use other vocabulary that's much more expansive and full of possibility and potential. So instead of, oh, I have to, I choose to, I get to, I love to. So the same with our choices. I get to choose this for today. I can change my mind if I want to tomorrow. So keeping everything open and just right. Holding that curiosity. So the curiosity in that sense would be, I wonder how this choice will play out. But I know that if I choose to, or even and I know that if I choose to, I can change it tomorrow.
Right. And not feel bad about making that choice today. Right.
Very much about the compassion that I mentioned earlier. It's
yeah.
Just what it is. It is what it is. If it doesn't work out as I thought it might, it just is what it is, and I can change. I can do things a different way, and I can forgive myself for making that choice that wasn't as supportive as I thought it might be. But also knowing that it might have been supportive in the moment that I made it. It may be that other things have changed, and that's why it's no longer working out quite as I'd expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that element of self-care and self-compassion is so huge, right? And it's something that we don't typically give ourselves the opportunity to embrace, right? To allow ourselves the space to care about ourselves and to treat ourselves well. You know, there's a sort of like common phrase of you should treat yourself like someone you're responsible for caring about, right? Or like a best friend. And, you know, we don't treat ourselves that way. We tend to be far more harsh and critical of ourselves than we would of someone else in our position, you know. And the sort of easy exercise is like, well, if your friend was in the situation that you're in, would you be talking to them in the same way that you talk to yourself? Or would you be supportive and compassionate and empathetic and try and help them through it? And like, that's the way that most people would do things, and that's the way that you ought to treat yourself, right? In order to give yourself the best chance. I mean, there's no need to be so self-critical. Like, it doesn't help you or anyone to do that, right?
And there's the quote of, we've been beating ourselves up for so many years and it hasn't worked. Perhaps we should try a different way. Perhaps we should try being nice.
Yeah.
And if we think
yeah, it really doesn't work.
Yeah, if we really listen to, you know, observe in a more objective way the things that we say to ourselves, we wouldn't say half of it to our worst enemy, let alone our friend. So it's just, for me, it's just kind of noticing, paying attention, observing, and then choosing to reframe in a way that is more supportive. So it's not about, oh, I've done it again, I've criticized myself, and using my inner critic to beat myself up for beating myself up, which we can fall into that pattern too, because it's just a pattern. And as Abraham Hicks says, a thought is just, belief is just a thought I keep thinking.
Right. So
it's where that neuro-linguistic sort of stuff comes into play. The more I say that, the more the connections for saying that are strengthened in my brain, the more of a habit it becomes, the more I do it. But we can change it. It just takes that, as I was talking to somebody else earlier today and said, it's that pattern interrupt. Just come in and just break that pattern. And you can do it by just getting up,
mm-hmm.
moving around, just paying attention to your breath. Whatever it is that works for you in that moment, might be lots of different things, lots of different tools in your toolkit. but just break that pattern, become conscious of it, be open to admitting that it's happening, curious as to why it's happening, compassionate that it is happening, and choosing to reframe.
Right, and not judging yourself for it, right? That's the key, because otherwise you're just getting stuck in the same pattern just through the back door, right?
Yeah.
It really is a mean cycle to get stuck in, is, you know, beating yourself up and then feeling bad about doing that, and then just beating yourself up for beating yourself up, and then where do you go from there except to feel worse? And who's that help? It's certainly not helping you. It doesn't help anyone else. It's a disastrous situation that I think a lot of us find ourselves in a lot of the time, right? And it's really sad when that happens. But as you say, you can change it if you're firstly aware of it, right? So that would be the first step. Because if you're not aware of it, I mean, then you don't know anything else anyway, right? But being aware of it, you can then say, okay, well, now I'm going to try and do something different, right? And it's not that the changes will happen immediately, because, you know, you've been doing it for who knows how long, your whole life, let's say, right? So to make a change that's so ingrained in your belief system, you can do it, but it takes time, right? And so you've got to have that compassion and that empathy to allow yourself the time to change, right? And know along the process that it's going to take a while, but that's okay. And when it happens, it's fine, and you can deal with it, and you're still working towards, you know, this new way of being and making the changes along the way. But, you know, like, where do people get stuck, do you think, along that journey of change?
I think it's a lot of different factors, but there's part of the fact is not even recognizing that it isn't your own voice. It's something that you've internalized, because little kids, they don't talk about themselves like that. They're very positive about themselves, and they're quite proud of their achievements. But quite often adults, as you know, when we were kids, this is what we received, and therefore quite often what we pass on, will tell us things like, you shouldn't be proud. It's not good to be proud. Pride comes before a fall. And so we internalize that, and we start then to tell ourselves that we shouldn't be proud. It's not good to be proud. It's not nice to be proud. And there's a lot of kind of shaming and guilt in that, and that holds us stuck. Again, that's something that just makes us feel small and restricted. And so I think it's the compassion and the self-forgiveness, even just of understanding that that's where it's coming from. Because when we don't, it's so easy just to slip back into that pattern. So it's the noticing and the curiosity of, where has that come from? Whose voice is that? How can I start to let that go is kind of a common phrase, but I prefer Jack Kornfield's let it be. Because letting go of something kind of is really challenging sometimes, whereas letting be is just, well, it is what it is. But I can choose to do something different. So I think where people get stuck is probably quite different in a sense for each individual, but I think the overall thing is knowing that that's not necessarily our own voice, that we have taken it on board. We've taken it on board from even like parents, mentors, teachers, people we've respected. Particularly when you're a small child, you look up to these people. You are told to honor your father and your mother, or whatever your upbringing has been, that these people are the people who know better because they're older, because they're adults. So they don't necessarily know better. They're just doing what they learned. So it's not about blaming them either. It's not about blaming ourselves, it's about blaming them. But just coming to that understanding of, it's a pattern. And it's a pattern that I've internalized for whatever, you know, from whatever direction. But I can let it be. And I can
choose
different. So I think that's the crux of it, really.
Yeah, and I really like that distinction between let it go and let it be, because let it go really implies that there's an active step you must take, right? Which you often can't do in the moment because it's overwhelming, or it's so strong or so ingrained that, you know, to try and let it go, it's like telling someone, just be happy. It's like, okay, I mean, it's a good sentiment, but in reality, it doesn't work that way, right? Whereas let it be, or saying, you know, it is what it is, or just accept the present moment as it is it's somewhat active, but it's not the same kind of activeness in the sense of, like, you don't have to do anything other than just not resist whatever's happening, right? And allow it to be, even if it's unpleasant and uncomfortable and not what you want, it's fine because this is just how it is for the moment and it will change, and you can make choices to, you know, do it. You can make choices to change things or to alter how you're seeing the situation, right? With that curiosity that you're mentioning about, why is this here, right? Just look into it. Like, you don't have to judge it. You don't have to, condemn your thoughts or your feelings about things, and just ask, you know, well, why am I feeling this way? Like, where is it coming from? And then that's a slow step in terms of figuring out, you know, how to connect deeper with it. And then the change sort of just slowly happens over time, right? Where the continual awareness of what's happening and the desire to have it be different starts to build up those new neural pathways and, you know, strengthen those in, I mean, for lack of a better word, in competition with your other ones. And then you just, it's what you work on, right? And it's how you're choosing to give, it's choosing what you're giving attention to. And that's sort of what strengthens the behavioral patterns over time, right? But that awareness really is certainly crucial. And so how do you kind of guide people to have that awareness? Like, what are some good techniques that people can use to, you know, at least start the process of becoming aware of what's going on internally without it becoming overwhelming too quickly, or, you know, becoming too judgmental or critical or whatever it is?
For me, I often start with a body scan, just to tune in to what's going on, just even to not to judge, again, not saying that this feeling is right. Through the toes. And is there tension there? Is there tightness? Is there pain? Is there a sense of, actually, there's more weight going through one of my feet than the other, or my hips don't feel quite level, or, you know, whatever it might be. So just working down the body. But in doing that, we can also start to build up what I call a vocabulary. So I notice this feeling, and this feeling feels. What does that feel like for me? How do I feel when I'm feeling less than good? And I talk about well-being as not being the absence of dis-ease. It's actually so much more than that. So knowing how we feel when we feel not quite as good as I'd like to feel, versus how do I feel when I feel amazing? And actually then to have a vocabulary so that any time, to do this body scan quite regularly, particularly at first, so as you get kind of tuned into it all, like tuning in a radio station. And then you'll start to notice, oh, I'm feeling that feeling. And I know because I've done this before. I've checked into what I feel. I know where I am. And also, the more I start to tune into that, the more I start to notice what the things are that are happening maybe outside that I respond by feeling this way. So I start to notice, when I do this, I feel really good. So I want to bring more of that into my life. When I do that, I don't feel so good. So how can I change that, change my perspective of it, drop it from my life, do less of it, whatever it might be, and then start to build from that knowledge and that, how that self-awareness starts to support the whole inner stuff.
So when you say that one should develop a vocabulary around, you know, your sort of internal sensations and feelings and whatever it is that like, do you mean it in the sense of like, you should really try and you know, put words to what you're feeling. So you're saying like, well, I feel this tension, or I feel heaviness, or I feel this emotion, or this, you know, feeling, or whatever it is. Like, is it good to be more specific? So does that help with the sort of identification process?
If I can just pick you up on one thing, I don't think anyone should do that at all. I think
okay, good.
If they want to, it's some people may not be at that point in their life, in their journey. So it's very much this is an option. If you choose to do it, then go ahead. I'll also, from what you were saying before as well about interrupting patterns and stuff, you know, when we notice ourselves beating ourselves up because that's the pattern that we've got into, we're trying to break it now, but there I go again, those neurons have fired because they're the ones that are so used to firing. It's about, for me, noticing it with a sense of humor. Oh, I've noticed it. Yeah. And celebrating those little wins as well. So yes, I've noticed it. I've got a pre-frame for that. A reframe for that. I'm going to change it around and I'm going to go along that route. I choose to. But, I think it's doing it with humor. It's doing it just with consciousness. And in terms of labeling, I think that can help a lot of people. It helps with, emotional intelligence. It helps with being able to distinguish lots of nuances within feelings that we're experiencing. So I'm feeling anger, but what kind of anger? Wrath, ire, whatever. So if that's what works for you, if you're a word person, and I'm quite a wordy person, then maybe you choose words. Maybe you choose something else. Maybe you choose colors. If you're a very visual person, then that's red anger. Or that's a green feeling of peace, or that's a blue feeling of harmony, or totally the other way around, if that's how it works for you. It's finding what works for you as an individual that just helps with the self-understanding, self-consciousness and awareness. So just knowing within me, because when I can understand my inner environment, and I can start to take charge and have sovereignty in my inner environment, that's pretty much everything. Because we control, as in, you know, we have a handle on our external world and a sense of ability to cope with and get through our external experiences by what's going on inside. We can have a handle, a really good sense of, think,
and
we have that.
And do you think that people are afraid to look inside and see what's going on and like identify, or you know, just be curious about what they're feeling and whatever it is, because you know, a lot of people feel very strong so-called, you know, negative unpleasant emotions. Like that would be a point of I don't know, a blockage or an obstacle, right, to this. Because I think, I mean, even I can speak for myself, like in the past, like, you know, you do a lot of things to avoid feeling bad things. So there's certainly a sense of like, well, why would I then now take time to intentionally go and feel those things? And of course, that's a natural way of thinking about it, but it doesn't really work because those things don't go away. They kind of just store up and pile up and, you know, get worse and worse until you actually just sit and feel them and get through it, or, you know, either by yourself or with someone or whatever it is, but it doesn't go away. So, you know, why is that fear there, do you think? Like, what is it that people are so afraid of?
I ask myself this quite often and in a very generic kind of a way. Why are we so afraid of pain? Whatever that pain might be, whether it's physical pain, emotional pain. And I think, like you were saying, we're not taught how to handle, you kind of touched on not being taught how to handle these things. We're taught to fear them. We're taught that anger is a bad emotion. It's a negative emotion. And, you know, nice people don't get angry. Certainly nice girls don't get angry. So right. I think, and nice boys don't, you know, strong boys don't cry. So I think there is a cultural element to this. There is a possible gender element to this as well, but we are being taught these things. So if I feel angry and I'm being, you shouldn't feel angry, it's wrong, it's bad, it's not a nice emotion, then I will cover up that anger and I will do my damnedest to make sure that nobody else can see that I have it because I'm ashamed that I do. I'm not
being told,
oh, you feel angry. Okay, that's actually probably a perfectly rational response to whatever has happened. Let's take a look at that. Let's see how you deal with that anger, how you express it in a healthy way, or how you support yourself to let it be, or whatever it might be that's most supportive to you and most helpful for your inner development.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we get.
Yeah. Anger is an interesting emotion because it's typically a defensive strategy, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem like it necessarily at the time, and it often seems like quite a violent, you know, offensive attacking kind of mechanism. But really what underlies that is the need or the desire to defend whatever it is you think you're defending, you know, thoughts about yourself or your actual self or, you know, how you are and your relationships and things like that. And so the aggression comes through as a protective mechanism, but you really only can see that if you look past the anger and you see the fear or, you know, fear is usually what underlies it. Fear of, I don't know, not being good enough or, losing something or losing yourself or, you know, whatever it is. And so it's to be able to, you know, process that anger properly, you need to be able to say, okay, well, you know, what am I actually feeling here and why is this coming to be? You know, what am I trying to protect or defend against? And what can I do about it? And also then, you know, I guess it's about learning how to deal with and manage your anger. And anger, we're just saying, you know, could be anything, could be fear, shame, guilt, it doesn't matter. But it's learning to, you know, have that emotion, feel it, and then, you know, process it in a way that works for you. And so for some people, it's talking. For some people, it's, I don't know, exercise, working out, going at the punching bag. Like, there's lots of ways you can deal with it that's, you know, an acceptable way that you don't have to take it out on other people, which is generally the wrong way to do it. And so, yeah, I mean, wanted to add that in. And it's a very important point of like, emotions are there to tell you something. And, you know, you have to be able to be open to listening to really get the benefit of it and not have to run away with it so that you can control it in that situation, right?
And I think it's the same whether it's a physical sensation or it's an emotion, and quite often there's an emotion behind the physical sensation. So if we're having pain, unfortunately, quite often we reach for painkillers without actually asking my body, well, why? Why are you feeling pain in that area? Because mostly there will be a reason, and if we can deal with that reason, the pain will probably go away.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly in the early stages, if we can really start to explore before it becomes chronic, we can start to explore what's going on there. What is my body holding for me? A headache, a neck ache, whatever it might be. Just look into that. And then when I understand that, I get to also work with my body rather than against my body. And I start to get a new level of understanding of the kind of ways my body sends me all these signals all of the time, that I can start listening, that I can start supporting myself. And we were talking a little bit earlier about self-care, and we're not necessarily encouraged to self-care first, to make that a priority. We put other people first. But I think that self-care is the priority, because when we care for ourselves, we are our best self, and we share that with the people around us, and we role model this level of care for self. We have to also give permission to other people to do it, if we're giving ourselves permission to do it. But then, you know, we're all showing up as our best selves, and we're showing up not tired, not exhausted, not feeling threatened. And the world would be a very different place then.
Yeah. And everyone wants, you know, you to be your best self. Like it's weird, right? Like there's a weird association between like being selfish and taking care of yourself or being narcissistic or taking care of yourself. And I mean, there's obviously varying levels to it, but the kind that we're talking about here, I think, is that, you know, when you're not doing so well, taking care of yourself has to be a priority, because how much can you really help other people if you're not doing so good, right? And maybe you can do it for a short time, but really that's not going to last very long. And then that's going to start impacting other people around you because you're not at your best. And so you can't give your best to other people, right? And so really what everyone wants is for you to be the best and you know, healthiest and most content version of yourself, so that when you're around and interacting with other people and the world, like the best version of you comes through, right? And you can then work, you know, intelligently, or not intelligently, but like, yeah, with exactly. And you can be there with other people in that space, but it's not something that a lot of people do. And it's unfortunate, but I think that there's a big movement towards it these days, you know, self-care and self-soothing and all sorts of strategies and techniques that people use to take care of themselves. I think that there's a pretty good, you know, rise in that need and people taking that up and learning to start to take care of themselves and do what they need and listen to their bodies and their hearts about it, right?
And I think it's not only when we're maybe feeling not at our best that we need to do this. I think it's something we need to do, or something that is good to do all of the time. And that it's, we benefit when it's really radical self-care. So not just the fluffy stuff, not I'll have a nice bath or I'll cook a nice meal or whatever it might be, but that when it's true, radical, deep self-care, it's also the, am I, you know, how can I be my best self? Who is my best self? What does that mean? What does it mean to be me, as me, with as deep integrity and authenticity as I can be, and with as much balance as, and again, balance I don't think of as a noun, as much necessarily striving to be, but that we are exploring how we can hold our balance as an active, dynamic thing. Oh, my balance to readjust and as well. And the more we can kind of become aware of our whole self, being flexible in our mind, being flexible in having emotional intelligence, being flexible in my body, using movement, then I come to understand that. See, if you think of like a tensegrity model, how things have to change every time you shift one thing in the model. And it's just the same for us on all levels. And we are mind, body, and spirit, at the very least, if not. We are multidimensional, aspected beings, while also being interconnected and interdependent. So I think bearing those things in mind, it becomes clear as to why radical self-care is such a good thing to practice.
Yeah. And life isn't static, right? It's dynamic and constantly changing. And so to achieve a level of balance, it is not something that you can do permanently, forevermore. You know, you kind of, it's an ongoing process of being, finding a balance, and then life changes in some way or other. And then it, you know, shifts you off and you got to readjust. And, you know, that's kind of what life is about, is changing and adapting and evolving and becoming better with every step, and, you know, finding that balance at every point. And so, you know, if you find balance today and then tomorrow you're off, you don't have to feel bad about that, because that's just how it's going to be. You just got to learn how to say, okay, well, now how do I readjust and recalibrate, right? Like, what do I need today or in this moment more specifically in order to find that, you know, that balance and that And I guess with balance comes inner peace, right? Which is really what everyone's looking for in life, is just that feeling of contentment and that okayness to just be as you are, right? And I mean, that sort of ties into one of the things that you speak about a lot, which is loving yourself the way you are, right? Rather than the way that you should be or ought to be. And I think that's a very important point that is also not spoken about too much. What are your thoughts on that? Like, you know, where is it, where does that need to come from? Or what can people do to improve their, I guess, love for themselves?
I think it's all the things that we've been talking about. I think it's right. Also just knowing that we are, each of us is an individual. And as that individual, we belong where we are. And I love the things like where people talk about, I am made of stardust. You know, my what's in my body, the elements and whatever that go up to make and go into making me, were out there among the stars. They were part of the system over millennia. And can you think of how many generations have gone and how many, you know, even if you think of the number of times that a woman might get pregnant but lose the baby. And if I'm the one that survived, because my mum, she had a lot of miscarriages, I am one of the two who then was born as a child and developed and grew up. So the odds against us actually being here are astronomical.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. And I think you touched on the loving yourself as you are, but also as you are not, which is very much a part of what I believe and what I want to share with people. And it's part of my four pillars, which spell out the word wild. So wonder, because I think when we can see the world with that childlike wonder, when we can go back to that innocence and that kind of beginner's mind, that was something that I learned as well on my journey, to just look at everything as if this is the first time you've ever seen it. And you know, things like a child will say, but why is the sky blue? Where does the rainbow come from? How does a bird fly? How does it stay up there in the sky? How does a fish swim and not drown? When we can have those kinds of, isn't life just awesome kind of perspective on the world as much as we possibly can. There will be times when life just feels like it's hard work. And that's okay too. So it's even knowing while I'm in that, as a friend of mine calls it, a muddy puddle, I told him he should have trademarked it because everybody takes that and uses it now. But when you're having a muddy puddle day, because it's just instantly understandable, everybody knows what that means, what that would feel like. Even when you're having one of those days, just to go, it's okay, it'll probably be better tomorrow because the one constant in life is change. And this too will pass. Mm-hmm. So I believe very strongly in cultivating that sense of wonder. The second letter then, I, is intuition, as we've talked about. L being the love for yourself as you are and as you are not. Because quite often we're given all of these messages, either very explicitly or implicitly. This is how you should be. Are you thin enough? Are you intelligent enough? Are you whatever enough?
Yeah.
So it's about letting that be and just recognizing how amazing you are, whoever you are, wherever you are. The fact that you're here is amazing. And each one of us brings a different perspective on the world and therefore a different set of gifts. And when I think we were talking about the self-care and the caring for self allows us to show up as our best self, as our most authentic self, with as much integrity as we can possibly have, you know, when we're really caring for ourselves, when we're loving ourselves. And that lets our light shine. And that lets us share our gifts. So it's like I was saying before, that quote about, why do we beat ourselves up so much? It hasn't helped at all. It hasn't got us anywhere that we want to be. Let's try being nice to ourselves. It's that kind of idea as well. I was talking about that sense of restriction. When we can take that off, when we can really just be free to be who we are, to know that we are love, at our deepest mm-hmm. core, and not to be carrying the stuff that gets in the way of that. To let that all be. And then the D in Wild of my four pillars is dance, which comes back to the idea of balance. And the idea as well, when we can live lightly, because I think we take ourselves, as Abraham Hicks says, we take ourselves far too seriously. We take ourselves far too seriously. But underneath that is because we think there's some kind of a judgment. It's almost like we think life is a test. Somebody's watching us and they're going to say, you're not enough. You're not good enough. You're not smart enough. You're not thin enough, whatever it might be. And we always are thinking that in the back of our minds. And we're thinking that either we have to make ourselves into what we think the expectation is, or we have to cover over the flaws so that people don't see them. But if we can just love ourselves as we are, external judgment go, let the internalized voices that we've taken on from people who sadly, so our parents got their learning from their parents, we got their learning from their parents. If we could if we could pattern interrupt for all those generations, what a change that would be. And how much easier, like you were saying about that sense of inner peace, if we weren't beating ourselves up, if we were loving ourselves, if we were dancing and enjoying it and holding everything lightly and with grace, I think life would just be so much easier and happier, and we'd all be much more joyful. And as Neil Donald Walsh says, we get to choose. And Nelson Mandela, when he was in isolation, he got to choose his experience of that. So we don't necessarily get to choose what happens to us, but we get to choose how we respond to it.
Yeah, which is huge because, you know, life is tremendously challenging a lot of the time. And that's part of the evolution of everything is that challenge to become, you know, better and evolve and grow. And you don't have to try to do that. I mean, it's, you know, life's going to throw challenges at you everywhere. I mean, even if you, you know, live a relatively easy and content life, at some point, the people you know are going to start dying because death comes for us all. And, you know, you get sick or you lose this or these things happen or the world situation's a problem or politically it's a disaster or there's war or there's famine or there's all these really crazy shit that happens. But it is about how you respond to it, because most things in life, much to our discontent, we can't control. As much as we would like to control everything, we just can't. That's just not the reality of the situation. But you can control your response, or at least how you're responding to your response, even if you want to go a step deeper than that, right? Like, you might not be able to control how angry you get about something, but you can control what you do about that or what it means to you or for you to have that, right? And then it might change.
Yeah, and you can distinguish between getting to the point where you can go, that emotion, but I can choose if I engage with that or not, because where my attention mm-hmm. goes, my energy flows and that thing grows. So if I choose not to engage, it'll pass, drift, and the blue sky and the sunshine is still there. But if I feed it, which one am I going to feed? Am I going to feed love, or am I going to feed, feed fear? And fear, as you said, is behind so much of things like anger and all of those kinds of responses, reactions. So if I choose to engage with a thought, why not choose the ones that uplift me, the ones that feel really good and exciting, versus the ones that just drag me? Same with my emotions.
For sure.
If I feel anger, I can choose to explore it and find out why I'm feeling anger. And then I can choose to shift into love instead. or make the steps. So as long as I'm emotionally aware, conscious, then I can choose. I don't want to live in anger. I understand my anger. I'm going to work through my anger. I'm going to release and let it be, whatever it might be. But I don't have to stay there. I can face it, but I don't have to stay.
Right. Which, and that's not the same as suppressing it, right? Because that's not good. It's not about choosing to not feel it or to get rid of it, right? Because then you're not doing good things again. It's super important. And the other part of it is connection, right? To feel connected with life and with the universe and with God, if you want to use different terminology. I mean, it doesn't really matter, but you know, we do tend to think of ourselves, for whatever reason, as separate entities. I mean, even as a society, we have this weird conception of humanity as being separate from nature, right? And it's really strange, and separate from each other and from the universe. But really, we're so interconnected. And as you said earlier about, you know, we're just stardust. It's like, yeah, we're just elements interacting with the world. I mean, if the atmosphere just suddenly went away, guess what? You die. Or if, you know, there's the expression like, yeah, well, you're one heartbeat away from death at all times, pretty much. I mean, sounds a little bit morbid, but it's not supposed to. It's more about the sense of like, we're so connected with everything. And, you know, if we don't eat food, then we'll die. If we don't breathe, we'll die. It's like we interact with the environment and the universe at such an extraordinarily like intricate level that we overlook most of it all of the time. I mean, you know, and it's just about being able to take a step back and notice that with wonder, right? Just be like, how amazing is it that I'm alive in this situation? Because it's so dependent on so many different factors being exactly the case that it is for us to be alive right now, that it seems impossible, right? And if you contemplate that for a little bit, it certainly brings up that feeling of awe, of, you know, wonder, of just connectedness with the universe, with other people, with, you know, life itself. And that's something that we also tend to overlook and undervalue and underappreciate, right?
I think it's something that is part of Western society generally. And I've been listening to The Wisdom of Trauma. There's the Wisdom of Trauma movie with Abul Mahdi. And then there's the trauma series, and they've got a new trauma series, part two, that's out at the moment. And I was just listening to a recording from yesterday that talked to Indigenous peoples about exactly this issue. And one of them was talking about our hyper-individuality in the Western world. We have learnt, and I'm hoping that it's kind of like that idea of the pendulum, and the pendulum will swing back. I think it needs to. But we've become so focused on ourselves as an individual, and therefore have kind of disconnected, as we have disconnected our head and our body, disconnected from the whole and how we are a part of that whole. And I love the kind of concept of a holographic universe, the whole, the one within the whole and the whole within the one.
Yeah.
She was talking about, she's a native of a Canadian nation, the people of the Willow, and how they know the land intimately. And when she was growing up, she was taught the caribou, the moose, the beaver, whatever you can see, the sun, the moon, the skies, everything is all your family. You are related to every single thing that you can see, the plants, everything. And on a lot of levels, we're beginning, science in the Western world is beginning to catch up with that, is beginning to remember all of this stuff. We're finding ways now that we can actually measure and like, we know that trees have heartbeats, trees respond to touch. So, and we know about the movie about the fungus, about all the mycelium that's underneath the earth that connects every single thing across the whole of the earth's surface. And if you think of water, every single molecule, like within the oceans, is all interconnected. And we're interconnected energetically because of vibration and atoms and molecules anyway. But we've disconnected from all of that. And I think this woman was talking about, we need that humility back, because man, I presume it's come from the whole Darwinian, Newtonian kind of concept of the world. Man is above the animals. I know that kind of came around before, but it has evolved into, we are superior. And we use this kind of to allow ourselves to have lordship. It was only ever intended to be stewardship, if you read how the Bible was originally translated and why people have then used that to excuse this kind of behavior. But we've used it to be lords over nature. And we go in, and it always surprises me. Why do we think that we can do better than something that's been around here for millennia? I love it when they say, you know, it took the whole of evolution over a year. Mankind is in the last second.
Yeah.
We have such arrogance to think that we can do better, but we do it in so many different ways. We build on floodplains and all sorts. But this woman was talking about, if we can get back to that humility, to being happy to see that that animal, that tree, that plant is my kin. Why would I go out and then destroy the nature all around me? I am so dependent on, if the trees go, I have no oxygen to breathe.
Yeah.
If the insects go, I have no food to eat. If the water is toxic, I will, you know, it'll mess up the water cycle, the carbon cycle, food cycle, messes up everything. So when we can get back to that, actually, I am only such a small cog in the whole of this holistic, integrated being, then we're much more likely to see, how can I work with it? Just learning, how can I work with my body? How can I work with the greater body that is the whole of the earth?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's such an important point, right? Because, I mean, we you know, we're causing quite a lot of chaos in the world at the moment. And, you know, but I like the expression that's like, you know, evolution is smarter than you are, where we try and beat evolution one way or another. And really, it might seem to work for a small amount of time, but it doesn't in the end. Like, the natural order of things prevails by law, like it always will, right? And it might not be the way we want it or how we would like things to go, but we have no control over that. Just like we can't decide that, you know, we don't want gravity anymore. It's like, that's not how it works, though. You can't just make that decision. Or we can't just, you know, we do think, I don't know, it's very strange how we think of ourselves. And I think it probably, you know, it's for a discussion at a later time about the development of the ego and its separation from the rest of the body and the systems. But it's very strange, but you don't have to, you know, live that way. And lots of people don't. And it's a lot, and it's about the same things that we've been talking about just reconnecting with yourself, your inner self, you know, the world, people around you, and just not trying too hard to be something other than what you are and where you are and what's going on, because then you start trying to control things, right? And not blaming also other people or your, you know, because then you're doing the same thing. You're just externalizing the problems elsewhere. It's, you're now saying all the problems are other people's fault, and it's, that doesn't really help either. I mean, it might be true to some degree, but, you know, to find that sense of inner peace, it's not really going to help you. But anyway, I mean,
having that accountability, without blaming.
Mm-hmm.
So accepting our place in it all, and doing that, because sometimes when we start out on this journey, it can be so easy to be very overwhelmed and to feel so guilty, because part of the system and this doing X, Y, Z, and therefore I am a part of that. And because I am a small cog in that wheel, say, thinking about plastics or the environment or whatever it might be, how much can I do? We start to feel too small. But then there's that thing about, well, have you ever tried sleeping in a room with a mosquito? Doesn't matter how small you are. You can have a huge impact where you are just by the choices that you make. And
yeah,
you know, I think as well, we don't appreciate how complex these systems are. So there's the example of the wolves in Yellowstone Park. They took the wolves out and thought that'll be better for the ecosystem because the wolves killed a deer and blah, blah, blah. But the deer eat back the vegetation. And if they are too numerous because they're not being controlled by the wolves, then the vegetation will change and then the rivers will change. So they had to put the wolves back and the course of the rivers changed. And I'm sure that video is probably still available on YouTube, but it just makes you think we don't have a full understanding of what nature is doing so beautifully all by herself.
Yeah.
Again, find ways to work with that rather than, because we're so used to this, there's something in us that is so resistant sometimes to things. And we just want things to be a certain way and we want to have that control. And we, as you were saying, sometimes have an illusion of having a degree of that control. But in the end, it goes a bit pear-shaped. Whereas if we just go with not feeling that we need to control or change the outside and just being in sovereignty in ourselves and in our reactions and our responses and our choices, knowing that we can be accountable for that, but we don't have to be accountable for anything else because that's out of our control. It's not our responsibility. But I think so many of us feel so responsible, or we've been shamed and guilted in the past, or whatever it might be, that we've lost that sense of, I only need to be in charge of myself and be accountable for myself. That's all I need to do. And we can. I love simplicity, keeping things simple. That's big in my life.
Yeah.
When we can do that, then it just, the clarity comes back.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you fix the inside, the outside sorts itself out, right? That's the general dictum on that note. But listen, Robin, thank you very much for coming on the podcast today. I've really enjoyed this conversation and I hope it helps some people, you know, with whatever it is that they're going through. I will put links and stuff in the description, but just, you know, where can people find you if they want to contact you, or, you know, what would you like to promote or anything like that? Feel free to give it a go.
My website is probably one of the best places to find me. So that's equenergy.com, EQUENERGY. So EQU from equilibrium and energy, equenergy.com. I'm also on Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram. Again, just search for Equenergy and you'll probably find me there.
Cool. Great. Well, I, you know, highly recommend it. And thank you again. And I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Thanks a lot, Shane. It's been lovely to have a chance to talk about all of this stuff that I just love.
Absolutely. All right. Take care. We'll be right back.